I catch your 5 a.m. hour sometimes. I'll try to text
and
you.
We're live.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Another Texans Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, John Crumpler, and I'm here as always with Patrick Storm. Storm, how are you doing tonight?
Good, man. Sorry, we're just running a little bit late.
But, yeah, and we have a really exciting episode lined up tonight. Obviously, Another Texans Podcast sponsored by USA Today is the Texans Wire, and we have a Texans Wire alumni who's now doing big other things. Cole Thompson, a good friend of ours from Twitter Spaces and someone we love talking ball with. Cole, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, you know, Jose Altuve hit 3 home runs. I thought the 3 of us could knock this out of the park. So why don't we just go ahead and build something promising together? I'm rocking and rolling. I get to hang out with you guys, and we can talk Texans. We got game week. We are less than, what is it now, 5 full days away until kickoff at MMT Bank Stadium, where a new era begins, one of promise and potential. And we've heard that, like, every single year for, I don't know, the last 5 years, that it's going to get better. But this is actually the year, guys. This is the year it's going to get better.
Yeah, and it feels very real this time. And, fellas, after a long offseason, there are some substantial things to talk about. And I kind of want to work our way. We're going to do a pretty comprehensive preview of the Baltimore game. But, you know, kind of the idea for bringing Cole on started this past week when Mike Evans, obviously a 30-year-old receiver with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's won a Super Bowl there. He's had 9 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. And he set a deadline this week, September 9th, give me a new contract or we'll turn our attention towards the next team. And that left a lot of Texans fan wondering, hey, is Mike Evans the Texas-grown solution to our problem at wide receiver 1? And Cole, I'm going to give the opening rant. I've got the Astros behind me. You guys can see. I'm going to give the opening rant to you tonight about how do you feel about Mike Evans potentially joining the Texans at this juncture?
Oh, where do we start? Okay, well, how about we go ahead and break down what exactly does this mean? Is he joining the Texans via a trade or is he joining the Texans via free agency? Because those are two drastically different outcomes. Both could be positive, but for dramatic reasons. Let's start off with why free agency is the only way to go. It's 5 words. You literally cannot afford. That's plain and simple. It's that way. It's that easy. I don't have to go any further. I don't need to go ahead into detail. Look at the salary cap. Look at the way the team is. Look at where money has gone. You do not have the funds to be able to afford Mike Evans this year, unless you're willing to give up substantial draft capital. Now, it's fine if you want to give up draft capital. I understand you want to get a proven commodity for a young quarterback that can be a security blanket. Oh, wait, you did that by getting Dalton Schultz at tight end, a third down machine that really helped set the tone during his time in Dallas. And also Jason Witten did the exact same thing when Dak Prescott was coming out. Last I checked, there were a couple of pundits on the likes of the Twitter sphere that said CJ Stroud's best comp was Dak Prescott. So you need to rely on that tight end. So you've already invested money at that position. Now let's move on to the other factor. Number one, if you go sign Mike Evans or trade for Mike Evans, you don't have the funds to be able to afford his $11.3 million contract. So the last year of his deal at 30 years old is going to be around $11.3 million. So the thing with that is a team is willing to take on half or more of that salary. But when you don't have the funds, how you go about it is by giving up bigger draft capital. So everyone out there that's saying, oh, they'll give up a 3 and a 5 in 2025, they'll give up a 4th and a 6 and we'll be able to land ourselves a premier wide receiver because this team is desperate to go ahead and get. No, that's not how it works. It works when you have the money. But if you don't have the money, you have to give up more. So instead of giving up a 3rd and a 5th and the one being a 2025 third, you would give up a 2024 second and a 2024 fifth or a 2024 second and a 2025 fourth. So the way that the salary works is they're willing to eat that contract because if you're garnering more draft capital. Last I checked, you don't own your first round pick. You don't own a 5th round pick. You don't own a 2025 5th round pick. And you're still a team that as good as an offseason as you had, as high as potential this team has, as much upside and glaring gratuitous love and admiration that this fan base wants to give, you're still a rebuilding team. And what does Mike Evans do? he maybe takes you from being a 6-win team to a 7-win team or an 8-win team. And an 8-win team in the AFC is not good enough to make the playoffs. So it's good enough to screw over a team such as Arizona when it comes to their draft pick, which is wonderful because, hey, Marvin Harrison Jr. reuniting with C.J. Stroud, who wouldn't love that? And you would hate to see your pick be that guy. Kind of a few years ago when Ja'Marr Chase was supposed to be like in line for the Texans at number 3, and then he goes to Cincinnati because you trade away to go get Laremy Tunsil. So you hate seeing that happen. But on the flip side, the second that he touches down in Houston, he needs a new deal. Because it doesn't just change because of Tampa Bay wants to pay him. Oh, Tampa Bay doesn't want to pay him. No. You now need to pay him. You now need to be the one to go ahead and give him a new contract. So you need to find a way to reevaluate your assets and whatever that may be, either cut players to free up salary cap space, extend players on longer deals to be able to afford his salary for, what would it be, probably a 2 or 3 year deal, which, by the way, he wants over $20 million in annual salary. This is not a 30-year-old receiver who's going to take the hometown discount because, oh, golly gee, I miss playing in the Lone Star State. No, he sees that what his value is. He sees what his production is. He understands what type of player he can be. He's going to take that deal. And 10 times out of 10, he wants to get paid because if he knows what his worth is. He's the only receiver in NFL history to have 9 consecutive 1,000-yard receiver seasons. Not Randy Moss, not Chris Carter, not Jerry Rice, not these people, Mike Evans. And even though Mike Evans is slightly at this point getting to the line of overrated, underrated, he still has the production. You also were basically telling the rest of your receiving corps, go screw yourself. You literally are telling Nico Collins that we do not believe in you. You're literally saying that Tank Dell, best of luck. Thanks for being a number 3. You're telling Xavier Hutchinson, who was a really nice find and a great type of receiver that fits the same mold from Iowa State. Yeah, special teams are bust. And John Metchie, you might as well throw in the deal because he's never seen the field if you make this deal. I like Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans would be a wonderful addition for this style of offense. And this offense needs a premier wide receiver. But you have no idea what Nico Collins could be in a full 17-game stretch. Why? You haven't seen it. You have no idea what Tank Dell could be. Why? You haven't seen it. And let me also add in with 6 more words. 2024 wide receiver class is loaded. They have exceptional talent outside of Marvin Harrison Jr. And everyone wants to go ahead and turn into MBJ. Oh, you know, we got hit. Emeka Abuka, his wide receiver number 2, would be a number 1 anywhere else in the country. You just watched Keon Coleman on Sunday night deliver a hat trick for Florida State. And the dude is 6'4" and he can scoot. You have Roma Dunzie, who's playing at Washington and came off a 1,000-yard season last year. Jalen McMillan, 80 worthy at Texas. Xavier Worthy at Texas. You also have guys such as Dante Cephas at Penn State. You have Johnny Wilson at Florida State. You got great tight end play like Brock Bowers, such as Jatavion Sanders. You have weaponry in the draft. And you have not your first round pick, so you need to save the draft capital. A guy like Keon Coleman will be in play when Cleveland is on the clock. And if he's not there, Worthy is there. And if he's not there, McMillan is there. And if he's not there, another receiver that's going to have a breakout season and absolutely strut his stuff and prove that he is a Heisman caliber or Fred Biletnikoff Award winner will be there for you when you're selecting. So I'm sorry. I love you, Texans fans. You are wonderful people. You've always been sweet to me. Actually, you haven't. You've always chastised me when I fill in on ESPN 97.5. You always give me the flack and say that I sound like a Muppet. I don't really care. I don't. If you want to add in Mike Evans, do it in the offseason because you can afford his contract without giving up draft capital and keeping your team on the path to the retooling stage. You're in phase 2 of the rebuild. You're not a piece away from being a playoff contender. You're not even a piece away from being a playoff team.
That was beautiful. And this is where I can tell you've got your practicing your chops on doing these radio show by yourself.
I don't sleep, so I just have to find a way to keep myself entertained. And it just literally rambles in my brain nonstop. Ask anyone on the beat. They're like, how is he functioning right now? Caffeine, maybe.
Well, you make it work, and there are a lot of points. That was an excellent higher-level overview of why Mike Evans might not work. Storm, I do want to talk about some of these things, but first I'm going to turn it to you. What would you like about a Mike Evans trade, and what reasons, some of which are going to be the same you touched on, might you hesitate? How did you feel about the potential speculation?
I mean, did John just leave?
No! I wonder what happened.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I just have to keep
picking up and run with it, I guess. I mean, the speculation is definitely fun to, you know, it's something to think about, right? Here he's coming back in.
Beautiful. Hi, John. Sure. Welcome back in. You missed the entire.
Sorry, I'm done. I already gave my answer.
I brought up a lot of pros and cons. They were really smart. They were really valuable. I mean, he actually changed my opinion. Screw what I said a second
ago. Wow. I can't believe
that. Quicker. It doesn't take long. So, you know, like the speculation was fun, right? It's something to think about. It's exciting. You know, you look at what Mike Evans has done in this league, and, you know, it's hard to. You know, it's hard to not want a wide receiver of that caliber, right? But like Cole said, do you trade for that guy and then push everybody else's development further back because, you know, it's just you got to roll with him now that you've traded for him, and then you're going to have to pay him. So, you know, from like, you know, absolutely would love to have him on the team, but at what cost? And that's where it really boils down to for me. Is what cost draft capital, money, and development for the guys you've already sunk cost into, are you willing to give up and push back? But, I mean, you look at what Mike Evans did last year, 77 catches, 1,124 yards, first player with 1,000 yards in his first 9 seasons. You absolutely want to have a guy like that on your team, but I feel like the way to go about that at this point would be, like Cole said, is do it in the offseason. It's not do it right now. It's not mathematically possible, which what you've seen from a salary cap standpoint, from Texans cap, he's done a great job of outlining it and putting it in perspective. And then just, you know, a logical sense of draft capital, you know, it's not reasonable. So.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why this doesn't work. And I do want to highlight Mike Evans would make this team. I think he's worth more than one win, Cole. Like, I really do think Mike Evans would add a dimension to this offense, and it's so unfortunate because you can't talk about it without talking about he's taken over someone's role. We would not get to see the third-year breakout for Nico Collins because a lot of those routes, a lot of those concepts, that role in this offense, Mike Evans would – I mean, he'd slide into perfectly, and you'd be replacing Nico Collins with someone who is a 4-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion, 9 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons – what that could do to acclimate CJ Stroud to the league in terms of giving this offense some easy first downs. I think right now, you know, I believe in Bobby Sloak. I believe the Texans are equipped to do it, that they can generate the hard first downs, that they can scheme up the yardage and the scores that they want. But Mike Evans, a lot like when I had conversations about DeAndre Hopkins, it's adding an easy button to your offense. It's adding someone to say, hey, if nothing else is working, let's just get it to this guy because we trust in him to win and we trust him to come down with that. But the problem is, despite that greatness, I mean, I agree with you guys. There are just so many factors that make this difficult, and the hardest of which would be you are throwing away the development of your young guys. Nico Collins, we're not going to get to know what he looks like in a featured role. John Mechie, I mean, right now we're already wondering what is his like path to getting on the field. Because I think he's behind two guys, Nico Collins, Robert Woods, who are going to play a lot of snaps on the outside. And I think there are things that Noah Brown probably does better than him right now coming into the league. And that pushes everyone down a peg. So if John Mechie goes from a slight question to a big question, Xavier Hutchinson goes from a big question to an impossible to get on the field. And it's not only the cost of the second round pick in the four. It's the cost of you're going to throw away the third round pick in 2021. The 4 picks you traded to go get Mechie, the role that you dreamed up for Tank Dell for this season that I think is very intentional, you're going to reduce that. So I love Mike Evans. If, you know, if you didn't have to trade for him, if you could assign him like you can in this upcoming offseason, like you could when we were talking about the DeAndre Hopkins equation, I think that might have changed things. But the matter of fact is, it does not make sense financially in their current situation. I don't know if this is the time to part with draft capital. And Cole, you know these guys better than us. There are a lot of good wide receivers in college football this season. I think that's going to be a trend that only continues throughout the league as we see, I mean, really the downstream effects of a generation raised on 7-on-7. There's some the best athletes in the country are playing wideout. And I think one of them is probably going to join the Texans in the first 2 rounds this upcoming year.
the thing that I hate more than anything right now is that every single offseason I hear, well, wait till next year when you see this wide receiver class. It's like, gosh, dang it, they're right. Because you hear about it with quarterbacks all the time. Oh, don't worry about taking this quarterback because next year's quarterback class is going to be great. And they always find one or two players who disappoint. There's always one or two, like Sam Howell and Spencer Rattler. Remember that conversation when the Texans were supposed to be picking? And it was like, okay, who are you getting? The Oklahoma product or the slinging guy that's now in Washington? And they both ended up being mediocre at best. They both ended up not having the successful years. One went in the fifth round, one still in college at Columbia, South Carolina. But the wide receiver class is always different. And the thing is that you see talent every year go in the third, fourth, sixth, seventh round, and they make some bit of an impact to where eventually they will be viewed as some part of the offense moving forward. So it doesn't mean you have to take one at pick number 13 or 15 or 17 or wherever the hell Cleveland's picking, because of there's going to be quality receivers and guys that maybe fit your offense a little bit better that could be secondary needs by the season's end. The thing that's really interesting about the whole Mike Evans thing and the part that irks me is that you have to pay for him, number one. You also have to hope that the production doesn't dwindle the second he arrives in town, because of after the age of 30, we don't see many receivers continuously put up 1,000-yard seasons. They don't end up finding ways to be as elite skill route runners because the body has wear and tear. And the second an injury gets up there, you lose another part of the season, and then the injuries continue to stockpile. And the other thing is that once you give out that extension, you can't give out extensions to anyone else. So your entire draft strategy changes to where, say, you lose out on a Jonathan Greenard who's going into a contract year, and then you lose out on Jerry Hughes who's going into a contract year. Well, now your attention has to go to defensive line, and what if the edge class is not as good this year as it was last year? So you get your one dude, but you really like a Jared Verse, and Jared Verse was phenomenal last weekend against LSU, and he was phenomenal last year. Well, he's out of play, and now you're stuck holding the bar with a veteran receiver that's going to be an annual contract of anywhere between, I would say, $20 to $22 million for 2-3 years. You have to change your draft strategy, and there's abundance of talent that you could get on a 4 or 5 year deal on a rookie cost. And the biggest thing, you can see where the chemistry goes with this young arsenal. And that's the part that I think a lot of people are kind of forgetting, is that it is a young arsenal that could be something to build upon for the future. Look at what's happening in the likes of Cincinnati right now. Like, Cincinnati is probably the one team that you don't want to mess around and find out about on a Sunday because of what they can do with their core, with their valued core of offensive pieces. And I want to find that in Houston. I don't want to get a veteran who I have to worry about, is his hamstring going to hold up for a 17-game stretch? And is he going to produce like he used to, because if I'm paying him for what he did produce, not what he will produce?
And the age thing is such an interesting consideration because, I mean, this is a guy that you're trading for and you have to extend. But
you have to. Like,
really, the age thing comes into me when I think about what contract am I comfortable giving Mike Evans. So we know he wants over $20 million per year. I'm not comfortable giving him 3 years, $66 million, like $22 million for 3 years. Because at 32, I think it's very unlikely that he's still producing at this level. So it's saying, are you willing to trade a second and a fourth for this season and one more of Mike Evans? And you're missing out on four cost-controlled years of, I mean, I was tweeting this week, like, could you get a guy like an Xavier Worthy with Houston's second-round pick if Quinn Ewers isn't going to hit on those deep throws? Like, could you get a really good wide receiver there, even if it's not the first round? And I think the answer is yes. So the opportunity cost, in addition with the young guys, becomes so hard. Storm, how many people do we have watching tonight?
It's been up and down from about 23, 24, 19 right now.
All right. Yeah, thanks for watching, guys. Any comments on this situation?
I mean, there's been a few, just, you know, people like Jaleel, Jalen said, don't think we can afford to give up the draft capital right now. Then he went on to say Brock Bowers with the Browns pick. And then Andrew touched on something, getting a tight end draft doesn't make since when they just signed Dalton Schultz.
But they signed Schultz for a year. That's the problem, is that it's a one-year deal. And the thing is that if Schultz doesn't get the contract that he wants, what's he going to do to stay here? Like, why is he going to stay here if he can get more money on the open market and you want to go ahead and point your direction elsewhere, maybe to a tight end that works? Here's the thing. What would you – is there a wide receiver for the exact same price, for the exact same price of what you would have to pay for Mike Evans, who, again, Houston pride, Galveston base, always had the love for the Galveston balls. He ends up same price, any receiver you're trading for this year. Because that should answer your question if you're going to do it for Mike Evans. Because if you're not going to do it for a younger receiver, why would you do it for Mike Evans?
Yeah, and I mean, that's – I think, you know, I don't remember who was – I think John maybe said it earlier. You're not a piece away. Maybe it was you, Cole. But you're not a piece away right now, so it doesn't make sense. Like, if you're at 7 wins at the deadline, then maybe, right? Then you have to reevaluate things. But like you said earlier, Cole, with where they're at in the rebuild right now, they're not – I don't think they're expecting to be at 7 wins at the deadline, right? So if – you know, if they go out there and they surprise the world and they're 7-8 wins in October when we're sitting here getting ready for Halloween and the deadline's approaching, and then they've got to they're going to be reevaluating stuff. What can we go get on the market? Because we're exceeding expectations right now. What can we go get on the market from, you know, teams that are willing to offload these wide receivers or other pieces? And let's go that route. Maybe there is that other piece at that point that they can find that can help push them over the top and continue that momentum. I just don't think that's realistic at this point right now with where they're at.
Here's my counter argument. You said 7 wins at the deadline, right?
Yeah.
All right. So if you're at 7 wins at the deadline, doesn't that mean that your wide receivers are probably working? So why would you trade for one?
Oh yeah. And that's why I said any other component, right? They maybe go out there and find an offensive line, you know, if they need an offensive lineman or another tight end or something.
Nick's done enough of that. We don't need it.
Anymore. Exactly. Right. Like offensive line is probably going to be set, right? Like we're hoping these guys get healthy by that time and they're back. You know, something on the defensive side of the ball, maybe a linebacker, maybe you're going out there and getting an edge rusher. You know, you've got some guy that's just maybe Nick Bosa is available for really cheap because they weren't able to extend him. Chris Jones, something like that. At that point, we're living in a fantasy world when we're talking about that stuff. I get it. But like that's the reality of where this team is they're not in a position to make a move like this because they're just not at that phase in with the roster construction currently. So, I mean, it sucks to say that, right? Because you want your team to be as competitive as possible and, you know, going undefeated every season, 17 wins, whatever. But reality hits you in the face and it's just not reasonable. So,
but here's the thing that also, like, you guys are talking about wide receivers real fast. Everyone mentions T. Higgins. Everyone mentions T, and I get it because T is going to be the one that's the odd man out because you got to pay for everyone else in Cincinnati. Burrow's got to get his deal. Chase has got to get his deal. You just paid Logan Wilson. You just paid for Hendrickson to get an extension. You're going to probably extend DJ Reader. Why not go get Brandon Ayuk if he's available? Because if he already knows the offense, why not go get the guy who already knows what you're looking for in terms of a number one receiver and honestly has more upside than Deebo Samuel? That is my opinion. If you're going to make a trade with San Francisco and you really want to add in a wide receiver, how about get the dude that last year went for over 1,000 yards in a similar concept?
I mean, I think the wide receiver discussion is not going anywhere. Until these players prove something, there's a huge need for a wide receiver one on this team. I think it's going to change the dynamic of the offense. And right now what we're all watching in Houston through these first 6 weeks, I don't think they would address it any sooner unless someone came on the market unexpectedly, is can a Nico Collins do this? I don't think Tank Dell's wide receiver one, but can he scheme enough up that you start to get some easier looks for other guys? And certainly the Mike Evans conversation is not going anywhere unless he signs an extension in the next few days here. So I do think this is a good transition point. I want to leave plenty of time to talk about the Baltimore game. Really quickly, I did want to talk about, did you guys see the comments from Colin Cowherd?
I only want to spend about 10 minutes
on this, but for anyone who did not see it, Colin came out today and he said that he was wowed by the college quarterbacks. I think we all are right now. Went on to say that he could see as many as 7 first-rounders at quarterback this year, which is when most of us should have stopped listening. And he made a good point that I do think quarterbacks are expected to be successful earlier now with how much experience and some of this training they get early on. But he kind of lost a lot of us when he went on to say, the quote was, "I don't know if they'll give CJ Stroud a second season. The guys we're watching in college right now are better athletes than CJ Stroud." And for me, that's a hold the phone. Two of these guys are better prospects than CJ Stroud. And the second one is a maybe. I'm not fully sold on Drake May. Yes, one is definitively better. The second one's a maybe. So what did you think of the Cowherd hot take? And sort of seemingly CJ Stroud is the guy catching all the heat from the national media. Everyone loves Anthony Richardson. Everyone loves the personality of Bryce Young. What is Stroud going to have to do to get this noise to stop?
I'll let Pat go first because I took full reins last time.
I mean, he's just going to have to go out there and do what he did at Ohio State, man. And he's just going to have to let it rip and do what we know he's capable of. Play fearless. And that's all we can hope for. Will that conversation stop eventually? Possibly. But, I mean, I hate even entertaining this conversation just because of the insanity that it is. I don't like Cowherd. I don't watch Cowherd for that reason, just because none of his stuff ever makes sense to me. But for the sake of this conversation, I just, you know, he's going to go out there and put up 3,500 yards, 4,000 yards, 25 touchdowns, four interceptions, seven on the ground himself. I don't know what it's going to, I don't really know what it would take to end that conversation, because to think that a team that like the Texans would use the second overall pick on a quarterback and then follow it up the next year with drafting another quarterback is stupid. And look what that does to an organization. Look what it did in Arizona. They did it. And then they went, you know, they drafted a quarterback and then they went and drafted Kyler Murray. And it just didn't work out, right? Like, it's still not working out. Kyler's a captain, but he's not even playing. And there's a chance that he may not play there. You know, who knows, but that's like, you just put yourself in this perpetual cycle of drafting a quarterback just because, but I don't know. It's stupid. It's really dumb.
So the wonderful thing about working in the national media when it comes to radio, if you want to go ahead and listen, go ahead and tune in. Just Saying It, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Got to do a shameless plug. Sorry about that, guys. Most of the time, you focus in on the NFL season. That's what most national people do. They love the NFL. They love talking about Sunday football. It's all about the gridiron in the National Football League. And college football is kind of just a dud thing because, it's a fun week. And then you do it for 1 week. You do it for Labor Day because there's no NFL. Because there's no NFL, so you have to find something to talk about. I went back and I looked up good old Colin Cowherd, Colin Cowherd, as I like to call him. He said on April 27th that the Texans are not a bottom four roster in the NFL. And the Texans know that if they're not a bottom four roster in the NFL, they basically will not be in line to draft Caleb Williams. When did that happen? Oh, I'm glad you asked, ladies and gentlemen. Right after he made the CJ Stroud pick. Right after the Texans add in CJ Stroud, and he said, "I believe the Texans are about a six-win team." So if you're a six-win team with a quarterback that is leading the charge starting week one and is building chemistry, continuity, and consistency with the wide receiver core, then that's room for improvement. Let's just go a step further. Let's just go ahead and go a step further. Are you okay with that, John? Are you okay with that, Pat? I'm hopefully you're okay with that, guys.
Yeah.
Keep it rolling.
In 2018, a guy by the name of Josh Allen got drafted out of the University of Wyoming and sucked. God awful. One of the worst quarterback performances that you would ever see. That next offseason, they spent money and they built around him. And then a year later, they added in a number one wide receiver. His name was Stephon Diggs, and they played in the AFC Championship game. Let's go another step further. In 2020, a quarterback by the name of Jalen Hurts was selected in the second round, replaced the likes of Carson Wentz at the end of the year, ended up doing an abysmal job underneath Doug Peterson. Peterson was shown the door. Sirianni comes in, and Sirianni wants Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz says, "Nope, get me the hell out of here." So when he leaves, they give it to Jalen Hurts, and Hurts gets better. And the year after, they add in a premier wide receiver. His name was A.J. Brown, and they end up playing for a Super Bowl. this offseason. You see what Justin Fields did. Fields last year led all quarterbacks in rushing, nearly beat Lamar Jackson's record, and they went and they added in exceptional offensive line depth, and they added in a premier number one wide receiver in the likes of a guy by the name of DJ Moore when they had the number one overall pick. So quarterbacks take time to develop, and I understand where you come from about the number of reps they get because of 7-on-7 camps, because of quarterback camps, because of all of this shindig that happens on in summers when they're supposed to be on vacation, visiting Disney World, kissing babies, hugging family. No, what they're doing is they're spending all those times building on their rapport. So the timing needs to be a little more sped up. But 1 year after getting the number two pick as your quarterback and taking yourself out of the Caleb Williams sweepstakes does not put you back in unless you automatically know that Cleveland is so bad that they are going to go pick at number two. That's how. And at that point, you still have to look at what happened with CJ Stroud. Did Stroud play good? Did Stroud play average? Does Stroud have any potential or upside behind a makeshift offensive line right now? Mediocre wide receivers that we have no idea what they can be, and questions on the defense. So if you end up getting that Cleveland pick, you can go anywhere with that, and maybe quarterback is not your biggest need. It takes 3 years to truly figure out where you believe this offense can be with a quarterback. You're not taking a quarterback no matter what happens, unless, you know, CJ Stroud retires, you know, because then all bets are off. At that point, you got to do whatever happens. And at that point, the Davis Mills troopers will have their day in the sun and they will scream to the heavens, "We knew it was our time. You gave up on him last year. It's time for him this year, guys." Man, it's a contract year. And you always perform in a contract year. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that, Sean. Definitely. The contract year.
I think that was extremely well said, that you're looking for improvement this whole season from CJ Stroud. It's going to take some time, as much football as he's played. Ohio State's offense, I don't think they asked him to stretch some muscles that he has, and he's going to improve this year massively. I mean, I tweeted earlier today, I think the tide could turn very quickly on how the national media talks about Stroud, just with the tools that he has.
Did you just say roll tide?
The tide.
But we could talk about
roll.
Could be a tough week for that for our Texas fans, so we'll spare that conversation. But I agree. And even if they had the number two pick, I think they'd trade it first. You could get 3 ones and a little bit more to launch this rebuild hard. So many things that we could say about this. Colin Cowherd, God bless him, endless stream of entertainment and topics. But guys, it's time to talk about the Houston Texans' first game of the season. They are ready to play a football game. And it is a brutal one. They are opening the season on the road at Baltimore. It'll be a noon kickoff Central Time. Baltimore, of course, was a 10-win team last year. They feature former MVP quarterback Lamar Jackson. They had one of the best defenses in the league, headlined by linebackers Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen. And they're historically extremely well-coached, extremely difficult to beat. And as technically sound as they come, it is a tough road matchup. And I want to break it all down. But I want to break it down first. I want to talk about what positive things are happening. What momentum is in Houston's direction that fans can watch the game and say, hey, we're a 10-point dog, but there are some reasons why we're in this game. Not just to cover, but maybe Houston could win the game. Cole, I'll give it to you first. If you are a Houston fan, or just someone who watches Houston a lot, you've been at camp, what are you the most optimistic about going into the contest against Baltimore?
Two things. For starters, run defense is going to be a lot better. I think that the fact that you change your personnel package and how you want to run it, and D'Amico Ryans is the one calling the plays. Because Matt Burke, as much as I like him and as much as I think that he will end up having a phenomenal year building a relationship with these players, he is coming from a different system, and when you are a first-year head coach, sometimes you are hesitant to give up on what you believe is the right call to get your team cooking. So D'Amico's calling the defense, but he also added in players who know what his defensive style is. Sheldon Rankins, Hassan Ridgeway, you add in a Jimmy Ward. But really that defensive line, I think, is going to be a lot better against the run, because also – they found great quality players to work opposite of the younger talent. So a player that I really, really loved, and it was actually my favorite move of the offseason, was when you go get a D'Amico Ryans, you want to pair a linebacker with a Christian Harris to where you get that same type of rapport that you have with Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner. And so you need a thumper, because the thing that always drove me crazy, crazy about Lovie Smith's defense was you didn't allow Christian Harris to do what he does best, play in space. He never did. So now you get that enforcer that can come downhill and stop the run at the line of scrimmage and allow Harris to work kind of everywhere on the field. So you add in a guy that's good against the run at linebacker. So that second level, even if there are times where there will have moments you see J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards and even Lamar Jackson rush for balls, you'll have levels to where you have a guy that can actually cover a Lamar Jackson in the open field. The second thing is third down offense. This Texans offense was anemic at times trying to connect on third down. And partially that was due to the quarterback situation. Partially that was due to the weaponry outside of Brandon Cooks, the injuries, the offensive line. But every good young quarterback needs that security blanket. And what do we know about Dalton Schultz? He was, when in Dallas, the, I believe, second most targeted tight end on third down for two consecutive seasons, only behind Travis Kelce. So when you look at having a guy, and the way, especially in the New Orleans game, that one pass, just that one slant route to where he gets wide open, breaks against the linebacker, gets right past the nickel defender, and Stroud zips it in right on the money, that's going to keep drives alive. That's going to keep you in games. That's going to eat the clock. And especially if any moment this game gets close, now you have to work up tempo. And as much as we can talk about right now with what's going on with Houston, brand new offense, brand new personnel, it is also brand new personnel in Baltimore. No more Greg Roman. It's now Todd Monken, two-time national champion, said sayonara Athens, Georgia. Let me go ahead and join the likes of the NFL. He's now running the show for Baltimore. So it's going to take some time for that offense to get acclimated. It's a very good game to where if you are a better, you may want to take the Texans at plus 10, even if the Texans don't cover, because if there could be mental mistakes with a young receiving core or an inexperienced receiving core, and also a new offensive style for Lamar Jackson. So I think third down offense is going to be something really intriguing to watch. And I think that the run defense and how you eliminate those short yardage that turn into massive gains upfield is going to be another area of strength.
Storm, what about you? Keys for the game where you feel good about Houston entering this week one contest?
It's going to be in the run. I feel like last year we were averaging 86.8 yards rushing per game, right? Baltimore was allowing 92.1. I feel like this with the combination of the offensive line getting better and another year with Damian Pierce and adding Devin Singletary to the backfield. What, baby? Okay, give me a second. I'm almost done with it, okay? Sorry. With just those things getting better in a second year for Pierce, the offensive line getting stronger, and just having, you know, just the play calling, I feel like that's going to be the advantage. I feel like Houston could take it up a notch and potentially and kind of test Baltimore on their run defense. The one thing that I do, the one caveat to that, though, is them adding Jadeveon Clowney and how good he is against the run. That worries me a little bit. But, you know, I feel like they can, you know, Slowick and them can neutralize him a little bit and kind of scheme some things away and, you know, take advantage of, you know, just what they've got. So,
yeah. Pat,
that's interesting.
He's 24. He's going to be making a lot of PBUs. We all know that that's DB number. So yeah, don't worry about the run defense.
They're going to be dropping him in the coverage, right?
They're like, dropping the coverage.
Was it Jacob Martin who dropped in the coverage in the third preseason game?
Oh, can you imagine? He went from defensive tackle to now cornerback in 2 days, 2 seasons. Can't wait. Hey, he's a weapon. He's a master, jack of all things, master of none. That's Jadeveon Clowney, number one overall pick.
I'm kind of chuckling because I'm going to have Houston's run game in our next segment when we talk about areas for concern. But I've got two things that I'm really excited about that if Houston's going to win, this is what I think would happen. One, and Cole touched on this, there's an element of surprise this offense in that people understand conceptually what it's going to look like, what the core principles are coming from. I think it's a lot of 2021 San Francisco, like very classic West Coast outside zone, Kyle Shanahan. That's where Bobby Slowick comes from. But nobody knows what that looks like with these pieces. And with the flair of 2023, when we're going to see a lot more motion from this offense than they were using back then, when they've got some guys that they really didn't feature with the starters in the preseason. We didn't get a lot of like run with Tank Dell, for example, with the starters. We didn't see any. I mean, we saw one deep shot to Nico Collins, and it was about as pretty as it gets if the defensive back doesn't make a crazy play. What does this offense look like when you attack horizontally? I think it's going to be difficult to win on the ground for reasons I'll talk about later, but no one knows how they want to win through the air with Stroud. And if they can surprise them with how they manipulate and stretch the defense vertically and some of the things they're going to do with motion, I think that could give them a chance. And the second thing I want to talk about, Baltimore is really rusty. This is a new offensive system under offensive coordinator Todd Monken, who came from the Georgia Bulldogs. And you've got a bunch of guys who have not played live football yet. Lamar Jackson missed a good chunk of last season, and he did not play any in the preseason. Running back J.K. Dobbins got hurt last year, and he's held out for all of preseason camp because he wants a new contract, which I don't think anyone thinks he's going to get that contract, but he held out regardless. The second guy on the depth chart, Gus Edwards, has also missed time with injury. You go to their receivers, Zay Flowers, their rookie played. He hasn't gotten to play with Lamar in a live game sequence, but their $18 million man, Odell Beckham Jr., did not play this preseason. Mark Andrews is obviously new to this scheme. I expect him to have an easier time, but offense is hard, and offense is very timing-based. If you come up against a really fundamentally sound D'Amico Ryan's defense and you get punched in the face, are you ready to beat them in the way that you're going to need, which is your talent has to sync up because they've got the athletes, I think, to neutralize some of the pure, the ridiculous things that Baltimore can do. And if they come out and they're really sound against Lamar on the run and, you know, you've got Stingley really giving some of these guys trouble in coverage, I'd be a little worried about Baltimore not having spent live game reps because all of this is still an idea, and we haven't seen it materialize yet.
It's an idea, but at the same time, there will be negatives here. And I think that's where you have to go to the cause for concern. Physicality, number one. It's physicality. Like, that's plain and simple. That's what Baltimore does. Baltimore knows how to bully you. Baltimore knows how to beat your butt. Baltimore knows how to go outwork you. Baltimore knows how to give a beatdown in old-fashioned style. Go ahead and pick your wick outside. Go meet mama in the back corner because she's about ready to go ham. Like, that's what Baltimore can do when they want to. And they have the talent to do so. Everyone forgets about last season because you talk about the number one defenses in the NFL and what a team like Philadelphia could do and what a team like Buffalo could do and what a team like Dallas did. Anybody remember what happened after Roquan Smith came into the Baltimore Ravens team? Number one defense in DBO. Best defense in college. I mean, best defense in the NFL. And there is a weak point. There is, because if you will be without your star cornerback, Marlon Humphrey, he's out for this game. So that's a huge plus when it comes to C.J. Stroud looking to take deep shots, because you already saw the accuracy is there. I mean, if he puts balls like that every play, even a guy like a Robert Woods or a Noah Brown or an Xavier Hutchinson, there's no excuse you can't come down with it. There's none. But this is a team that is known for physicality, and Nick Caserio probably said it best during his time when he was in New England, all those years that they had to go travel to MMT Bank Stadium. That is a place you don't want to play. That is a place you don't want to kick off your season. That is a place that is known for deteriorating offenses, making them anemic, and making them feel belittled and berated in front of a fan base that is ready to attack at any moment. So, yes, there is a huge advantage for Houston having other opponents miscues, such as a new offensive personnel. The wide receivers seem to be dropping like flies more so than they ever do in any other city. But this still is a team that knows how to win with continuity, with chemistry, with culture, and with a little bit more of gruffage along the way.
Yeah, I think that was well said. And I'm just going to go right into my areas for concern, because physicality lends itself to my number one thing. Baltimore was one of the NFL's best team against the run last year. They allowed the third least rushing yards, third worst yards per carry last year per NFL Next Gen. They were second in yards allowed over expectation. So basically, it was impossible to run the ball on this team, especially once Roquan Smith got there. And that is how the 2023 Houston Texans are built to win games. If they are not able to run, if they are not able to offer a legitimate and consistent threat of Damian Pierce is going to get 4 or 5 yards here and we're going to keep moving the chains, they really do not have the guys on the exterior, or at least shown to this point, that they can go out and win that way if they do become one-dimensional. My other concern is, you talked about the linebackers a positive, but I'll bring up Mark Andrews versus Christian Harris, who's trying to step into his own and be a key piece of this defense. I think there's a chance Mark Andrews kind of puts him in hell in coverage, or puts any of the slot cornerbacks, Tavier Thomas, whether any of the other linebackers. That is a really rough matchup. How they neutralize him and the pieces that they're going to need to throw at him to do that, it's complicated. It's something that I don't think inspires a lot of confidence for someone that Lamar Jackson's going to look at. He has continuity with Andrews, and we know that's his go-to target. So what is their answer for the NFL's second best tight end?
The other thing I will add in, and it's crazy to say, but I care more about what Derek Stingley does in this game than any other player. I care more about what Derek Stingley looks like in this game than any other player on that field. Because Stingley, number one, was your first round pick last year. We already are kind of already hesitant when it comes to Kenyon Green being that selection of pick number 15. But bygones be bygones. You got to move on, regroup, recover. But I remember when I was doing my self-scouting last year, every play, I fell in love more with Sauce Gardner. I said Sauce Gardner was the number one player in last year's draft, and I stand by that to this day, and I am all in on it. And this is a defense that is very similar to what New York loves to run. This is a defense that New York does a great job of mirroring because of it's run by Robert Saleh. And nobody was going to find success last year in a Lovie Smith cover two. Everyone knew the way you were playing. Everyone knew quarterbacks are going to be in the flats. It was just basically go ahead and have the safeties make a bunch of plays in the open field. That's what it was. But the problem is that this might be one of the more leisurely matchups for a hopeful number one cornerback in the NFL. You know right now, potentially, that Odell Beckham Jr. still has a couple of question marks when it comes to his game. Zay Flowers is probably going to line up in the slot, so you're going to be taken out of the play. Rashad Bateman's coming off of yet another season injury, and you have games ahead against guys like Garrett Wilson. You have games ahead against guys like Calvin Ridley. You have games ahead against guys like Michael Pittman. You have games ahead against Jamar Chase. You have to be able to handle business this game, because if you don't, other opponents are going to see your weaknesses and they're going to be able to feast on you. So the most important factor for this game to me is watching how a guy like Derek Stingley counter-reacts to any receiver he lines up against. I'm okay with him being CB2 this year if Steven Nelson has the same type of quality year that he had last season. But he has got to show improvement, and he's got to show that he's healthy, number one, and he's fluid, number two, because there was a reason why Sauce Gardner went number four overall, and there's a reason why he won Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, and so I feel like, looking at, you know, just how things were last year and where we are now, my biggest area for concern is going to be the wide receivers for us. And I think it, you know, we talked about it earlier when we were talking about the Mike Evans stuff, but looking at what, and Cole touched on this earlier, looking at what Baltimore does and what they have a history of doing, especially on the defensive side of the ball with bullying people, and Houston rolling with a lot of younger guys. Yeah, there's Noah Brown and there's Robert Woods who have some experience, but having some of these younger guys that don't have a whole lot of time in the NFL or any time in the NFL, right? And then you're going against guys like Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Williams, who last year had phenomenal years on a really good defense, right? Marcus Williams led the team last year with 8 passes defense, and this is going to be a really big test for CJ and these wide receivers. With the little bit of, you know, time that they've had together so far, and then now having to go out there and display at full speed against a defense like Baltimore, I think it's a very valid point to kind of be concerned about. And so hopefully they can keep things simple and let them, you know, just kind of let them just get a feel for things, get the ball rolling, get into a rhythm, and see how they can get it going. But, and they've just got to protect, CJ and the wide receivers have got to do their job and just, you know, protect themselves and make the right reads if they're, you know, if they're reading pressures and stuff like that. It's a tough defense they're going against. And I feel like the wide receivers may be the part that, you know, kind of slows things down this week for them.
And Storm, Cole went ahead and brought up Derek Stingley as his X factor for the game.
Oh, and I have an X factor.
I thought that was okay.
I'm a Deion Sanders.
Okay. Good. Well, then Then I would like to open the floor.
Do you believe that I have an X factor? Do you believe?
I believe you do. I just thought he was one of the guys I wrote down. Question. I was ready to talk about him potentially.
Next question.
Right, then I want to go because I think we've covered our concerns well. Guys, I asked both of you to pick someone in this game that could be the X factor that turns the tide or changes in a way we don't expect. Cole, you got pretty excited. Who's your X factor for week one in Baltimore?
Jimmy Ward, plain and simple.
That's interesting. Okay, let's see the case.
I'm sorry. See, this is why I didn't want to do that. But Jimmy Ward being that first piece that can line up anywhere. You do have questions on what you do in the nickel position, especially with depth purposes. Jimmy Ward's going to line up on any single player. He's going to line up in reps against Mark Andrews. He's going to line up in reps against, I think, Zay Flowers. He's going to line up in reps against the running backs out of the backfield. He's going to be somebody who I think has to be able to have that opportunity to basically just be a human chess piece and move around the field. And the one thing that Pat and I saw definitely every single time that we were at practice together, but the one thing that I saw more than ever, this is a safety unit that does not line up in the same spot twice. They will go everywhere. There will be plays where you will send down Jalen Petrie, and there'll be plays where you have Jimmy Ward lined up in a cover one. There will be plays where you have Jimmy Ward lined up at the line of scrimmage and plays where you still have Petrie in the box. They have that. So they're going to be versatile. Jimmy Ward, just let him eat. Let him eat and let him show you why, number one, he's a captain and why he is an enforcer and a good player for this defense as a leader, number one, but also as a vocal, physical enforcer that can do a little bit of everything. And I'm sorry for stealing your answer, Pat.
Well, so that's fine. So now I will change mine, and mine will be everything that you just said, but for Jalen Petrie.
There we go.
So now we're getting the best of both worlds. We got both of the captains back there. And I just, like, that's the thing, right? If they can, if Jimmy can do what he's done in this league for so long, that's made him a ton of money and that's made him, you know, be so respected, then I feel like that's going to be a huge weight lifted off of Petrie's shoulders. And that's just going to allow him to be so much better. Like, we already saw what he was capable of last year as a rookie, and just having that guy like Jimmy Ward next to him now, that the sky is the freaking limit for this kid. And I feel like this, we haven't seen anything yet.
By the way, Texans fans, 147 tackles for a safety is not a positive. It's not a positive at all.
Someone told me he was an all-pro. He was an all-pro for getting 147 tackles.
Stop.
No. So, Cole can attest to this, but if you saw and heard Jimmy Ward and Jalen Petrie at practice and the intensity that they brought and the amount of shit talking that was going on from those two alone, it was night and day from last year. Yeah. Night and day from the past few years, right? I haven't felt that out of a single unit on this team in years. And those two guys right there were just the epitome of badasses. They were taking names. They weren't letting anything go. And they were just showing these guys what they're going to do this year in the regular season. So I'm excited for that. John, go ahead. Who's your X factor?
I guess this leaves me, and I have kind of an obvious X factor, but I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. We've spent the last 6 months, and I think the national dialogue, the Texans dialogue, everything about CJ Stroud has been about what he cannot do. It has been, he is not mobile enough in the pocket. He does not feel pressure. He does not read the field well or test well. He does not have like this upper level mobility that you need to be an A-tier NFL quarterback. CJ Stroud can't convince them not to do a quarterback competition. CJ Stroud cannot elevate this Texans offense that doesn't have enough playmakers. And my question is, what if CJ Stroud is just a rock star? What if he is the guy that we watched against the University of Georgia? What if he is the guy that has had this chip on his shoulder his entire career and all he's done is produce? And this is a game that's set up. I really think the only way that the Houston Texans win this game is if CJ Stroud is a stud in this game and that he reads this defense well, that he gets the ball where it's supposed to go within the limits of the system, and he does some secondary creation. He extends plays to the point where there's some stuff in Houston's offense that you could not have predicted just looking at the depth chart. So it's a little cheesy, but I think that we have not spent enough time talking about the ceiling outcome for CJ Stroud for someone with his physical tools and for someone that was that produced the way he did, that was drafted where he was. And I think that ceiling's worth entertaining. It's not something I expect, but what if CJ Stroud's just going to have a phenomenal rookie season and play to the level that we've come to expect everywhere else he's played football. So that is what I'm curious to see, how he responds on the road, how he responds when he has his full arsenal of weapons, the full playbook at his disposal. And hey, everyone's expecting Baltimore to beat the shit out of you. Let's see what happens.
So Shaq Mason is your X factor. Got it.
You really think it's just the line?
Got it. Shaq Mason. No, just Shaq Mason. That's 100% it. You said everything about Shaq Mason. That's what I heard. Congrats. Like, great job, John. Great job. No, you're not wrong. You're 100% right. Here's one thing I will say. It's not an X factor, but I'm just really intrigued to see what happens. Going back to Dalton Schultz with that third down opportunity. Baltimore was really good on third down defense last year. They were really good at getting people off the field. They ranked fourth in the NFL on opposing third down conversion rates at 36.4%. So can you just find consistency? Like, that's all I think you're looking for at this point. It's just finding that rapport with your receivers. If you can do that, I'm okay with the loss. In fact, this has been something that's like been really irking me with Texans fans right now. And it's not you guys. And trust me, because you guys are realists and you understand, and you don't live in fairy tale land and you don't follow the bureaucrats that think that college football can just go ahead and be mitigated throughout the country. And we don't need conferences like stupid people, but I digress from that. I'm so mad about that thing. Anyways, I'd rather CJ Stroud give me a year of consistently improving and finish off six and 11 season than a 10-7 year where there's been up and downs, great defense, and I don't know what I'm getting next year. I would much rather know that next year he's going to be locked and loaded and he's going to be good, because if he does that, you solve most of your problems. Because if you need to have a good quarterback, and you need a great quarterback in the AFC, because there's going to be at least two quarterbacks that ball out this year, whether it's Lamar, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Justin Herbert. And they're going to be sitting at home on Sundays in January wondering what went wrong. So I'd much rather see that rapport and that consistency from CJ Stroud every single game get better along the way than finish the year off with a double-digit victory. That's just me.
And I agree. I don't think the wins matter. I do think the wins would come naturally if he has one of these ridiculous Herbert – Luck. I mean, Baker broke the touchdown record once upon a time, but you want signs that he's going to be a top 12 quarterback. I mean, even more, you want signs that he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. And if you get them, nothing else matters. And like we remember with Deshaun Watson a few years ago, I mean, everything becomes possible. So at this point, I do want to talk about, I want to talk about the spread. The Texans are obviously a 10-point dog to Baltimore, and Storm, I'll throw this one at you first. What are your predictions for the game? And if you were a betting man, where would you fall on it?
So I don't know. I'm not going to change my prediction. So when I was on with the guys from Apollo last week, I predicted Baltimore was going to win 24-21. I felt like it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people are giving them credit for. But I can't ignore the fact that Baltimore just on paper right now is a far better team. But I don't see Houston as being that bad of a team to where they should be a 10-point dog. I feel like this is the easy one for Vegas this week, right? This is the easy one for everybody that's doing those survivor pools and stuff like that. Like, this is the easy one. This is your week one. This is your cakewalk where you can pin Baltimore to win this one. But I still feel like it's going to be 24-21. I feel like we make it close. I'm not saying it's going to be garbage time where we make a comeback at the end. I don't care about any of that. All I care about is, like Cole said earlier, the consistency and stuff like that going in, you know, this week. But, you know, I'm being a realist, and, you know, Baltimore is they're a very tough opponent. Another thing, they've won 6 of their last 7 home openers. Okay. They've outscored their opponents in those matchups 228-68. That's a wide margin. That's a very good team over there, and they have been for years. And the Houston Texans are just not at that point yet. So 24-21, I think Vegas has got the line wrong, but we'll see.
If it was a touchdown, there's a touchdown, I would take Baltimore. I would take Baltimore. It's not a touchdown. 10.5 points. MMT Bank Stadium is one of the more dangerous places to play, especially to start off a year with brand new offense. That's going to cause a lot of problems. I still worry about the continuity of this offensive line because, number one, you heard that Nick Caserio was going to not play several of the guys they just added in because they didn't think that they were going to be up to speed. Well, you look at the depth chart today, Josh Jones is starting right now at left guard. But it's going to take some time for him to play live reps opposite of Laremy Tunsil, opposite of a Jarrett Patterson. Jarrett Patterson's got to get used to playing with the Shaq Mason. Shaq Mason's got to get used to playing with either George Fant or Titus Howard. Because remember, Titus comes back in and he plays week one. He was out for most of the preseason. So most of those reps that were going to Fant. So I think that you're going to see struggles very early on in the game. I do think that the offense gets a break because Marlon Humphrey will not be playing. I think you will be able to show off that deep ball accuracy and the ability to make highlight throws that really made CJ Stroud stand out when he was at Ohio State, because you got a glimpse in both the Texans preseason game at home and in New Orleans what pinpoint accuracy looks like when CJ Stroud can deal and when you give him time. So I think you're going to see that. I think ultimately Baltimore wins. I like their team. I really like their team. I think that there comes a point where you finally just either give up on what they are or they finally meet your expectations. And like them and Buffalo this year for me are like teetering this fence. Like Buffalo used to remind me, and Pat remembers this especially, but do you remember like when New Orleans went out every single offseason and added in like a wide receiver or like a linebacker or like a DB because of they wanted to end Drew Brees' tenure on such a high note with the Super Bowl. And by the end, Brees was the problem, but we always picked New Orleans to win the Super Bowl. That's Baltimore, because Baltimore has the defense. Baltimore has the offensive line. Baltimore has a great rushing attack. They paid Lamar. They paid Lamar Jackson. There's no more excuse. You got your contract. And they add in weaponry. At some point, you're just going to either be a really good team or you're just going to just be run-of-the-mill, average is beyond belief. I think that they probably are a playoff contending team. They are a playoff contending team. I think they are a playoff team as of this moment. I will say Baltimore wins 24-17. Good stop defensively in the second half. The offense just doesn't get it going because they become one-dimensional, especially if they get rid of the run game. I am not a big fan of Damian Pierce going up against Roquan Smith.
Yeah, I mean, those are some great points for why Houston can cover. And I like this a lot better when it was 9.5 than it is 10.5. But even now, I'm going to need to see it before I believe it. This is a Baltimore team that is so well coached and consistently so. They have an MVP at quarterback. They've got a good running back room that is complementary to Lamar. They went out and got weapons that, I mean, he heavily influenced. This is Odell Beckham. This is Zay Flowers. This is Ken Rashad Bateman, a former first rounder, finally make an impact. And I like Todd Monken. I really like him bringing some of these modern spread concepts to Baltimore. been pinning it on Lamar. And at every step of Lamar's career, when the collective public has kind of doubted his ability to take that next step, whether that was Heisman winner to a real pro prospect, whether that was a late first round pick into a starter. And I mean, really, that was like a good pro prospect into a first round pick and then a first round pick into an MVP candidate. He has met that jump. And I think that they're going to have a very good season. I'd like to pick Baltimore to win that division if Cincinnati wasn't so loaded on both sides of the football. And Houston's going to have some growing pains. If they did not have these offensive line injuries, I would have picked Houston to cover. But for now, I'm pretty concerned. I'll take Baltimore to win 28-17.
So you're really going over. We're being conservative here. We're actually trying to give some hope and belief, and you're just like crap.
Would 28-17 shock you?
What? No, not at all.
No. Four touchdowns.
Nothing with this team shocks me anymore, John. That's nothing. I am dead inside. I am barren. I am broke. I know everything about me. I want to be, and I do this professionally. I go and I sit there in the press conferences, and I still wonder what goes on sometimes. Like, this is what this team does. Nothing shocks me anymore. They make a trade tomorrow, and they send CJ Stroud, and Baker Mayfield walks on in. I slightly would be shocked. Slightly.
I mean, I just wanted to say one thing about Stroud. I really want it to work. I'm hoping it does work, but nothing's going to surprise me at this point. And guys, this was a great discussion. Cole, always love talking football with you, Pat. This is a good show. I'm enjoying this. And for anyone listening, thank you for joining us. Make sure you're checking out all of our content on the Texans Wire, texanswire.usatoday.com. Cole, where can they find your work if they want to hear more of you on the radio or read your thoughts on the Texans?
I'm on YouTube now. It's at Mr. Cole Thompson. I'm also at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, so you can give me a follow there. You can check out all my work at si.com, at multiple different outlets. You can also check out all of my rants and shindigs on podcast form, wherever you get your podcast listening systems.
All right. Well, Storm, anything you want to plug here at the end?
No, man, just thanks everybody for tuning in and like and subscribe. It's helping us grow pretty quickly, and we definitely appreciate it.
Subscribe to these people. Subscribe to them. They're very nice.
Cole has a YouTube now too, so go subscribe to that. Okay. Go give him some love there. But real quick, I wanted one more point. Michael Dieter can play left guard. Just because he's not on the depth chart doesn't mean he can't play left guard this week.
It's very true.
Now, should he play left guard this week?
Yes.
That's a question for another day.
Well, we got to wrap this one up.
Next episode.
That's a question for
depth chart.
Next time on another Texans podcast.
Guys, make sure you like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening to the podcast, please go ahead and subscribe there as well. Appreciate having all of you. Go Texans, and we will be back on Sunday with a recap episode, hopefully after a surprising win. We'll see.